It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan says a young suicide bomber carried out Saturday's attack on a Kurdish wedding party in southeast Turkey near the Syrian border, killing at least 51, wounding scores of others. Mr. Erdogan said Islamic State was likely behind it and the bomber may have been as young as 12. Regional analyst Ian Lustig of the University of Pennsylvania said if the blast is the work of the IS group, it could be a reprisal for gains against the IS group by U.S.-backed Kurdish forces fighting in northern Syria.
I think ISIS is attacking Turkey to try to get Turkey to crush the Kurds and also to warn Turkey not to become involved in the Syrian civil war in a way that would threaten ISIS.
The U.S. condemned the attack. Vice President Joe Biden expected to discuss the fight against terrorism when he visits Ankara this week. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is in Nairobi, where he will hold talks with East African foreign ministers on ways to stop neighboring South Sudan from sliding back into civil war. He'll also plan to discuss the situation in Somalia, looking toward upcoming parliamentary and presidential elections to help bring stability. America's diplomat will then stop in Nigeria to talk with officials about the Boko Haram insurgency, and then on to Saudi Arabia, leading an Arab coalition against Houthi rebels in Yemen. Tens of thousands of South Korean and U.S. troops have launched a two-week annual military drill despite a threat from North Korea to launch nuclear strikes. A state broadcasting newsreader said the exercise aims to harm North Korea's sovereignty, dignity, and the lives of the North Korean people, and evidence a nuclear war gaming against the North. A South Korean spokesman expressed regret over Pyongyang's position. This is VOA News. Despite stormy weather, the closing ceremonies were held in Maracana Stadium at Rio de Janeiro, ending 17 days of Olympic competition in the Brazilian city with a massive fireworks display. The games ended on a high note for Brazil, whose volleyball team put on a golden performance in the final day against Italy. The final day Sunday also featured 12 gold medal events, including men's basketball. The U.S. team easily coasted to gold in the matchup against Serbia. U.S. Olympic Committee CEO Scott Blackmun said despite venue problems, it was, on the whole, successful competition.
Despite all of the controversy leading in, whether it was water quality or Zika or security, that these games have been really well produced and enjoyed by the people who participated, most of all the athletes.
The U.S. dominated the games with 121 medals, followed by China, Britain, and Russia. It's on now to the next summer games in Tokyo in 2020. Three leaders of the European Union, Germany Chancellor Angela Merkel, French President Francois Hollande, and host Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi, meet on an island off the coast of Naples Monday on how to keep the European project going following June's British vote to leave the EU. Ben Welling is a European analyst at Australia's Monash University.
Clearly, Brexit is a big blow to the forward progress of European integration. The fact that you might lose one of your three major economies is serious, and it has the potential to disrupt and derail the European project.
The meeting comes amid concerns Brexit could lead to a referendum in the Netherlands. Hundreds of protesters marched through Hong Kong Sunday opposing a ban on pro-independence candidates from running in upcoming September 4th legislative elections. Protest organizer Jackie Hung is concerned this represents a further tightening of Beijing's control over the semi-autonomous city.
This is the first time that we have experienced that some of the candidates, which they have some different opinion with the government, that they are rejected to join this election. We are afraid that in future the government will have more conditions to oppose on the election, and more different political candidates or parties will not be allowed to join this election.
Officials said the candidates' views were against the city's mini-constitution. Indian troops killed three suspected militants Sunday in Indian-administered Kashmir. Authorities believe they crossed over from Pakistan. A wind-driven fire in central California has forced the closure of the historic Hearst Castle. The fire in San Luis Obispo County has destroyed 48 structures and burned more than 8,000 hectares since August 13, and is just 4 kilometers from the popular tourist attraction that houses a large art collection that belonged to William Randolph Hearst. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, August 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry meets tomorrow with Nigeria's president in Abuja to discuss counterterrorism.
Basically, to assist Nigeria, assist with intelligence, assist with resources, and lend any kind of helping hand that Nigeria can use.
Femi Adesina is special advisor on media and publicity to Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. Liberia's Supreme Court meets today with the two-fielding size of the country's House of Representatives. And the Khartoum government defends the visit of South Sudan's first Vice President, Taban Dengai.
When he comes to Juba and things are changed, Taban Deng is going to resign. And if that happens, then the situation will change. But if that happens, Taban Deng is a Vice President and will deal with him as such.
Ahmed Bilal is Sudan's information minister. The SPLM in opposition says peace can only come to South Sudan if the peace agreement signed last year is respected to the letter. And toxic waste victims in Ivory Coast demand justice 10 years after. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry meets tomorrow with Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari in Abuja to discuss, among other issues, counterterrorism efforts. A press release issued last week by the State Department said the secretary will also visit Sokoto, where he will deliver a speech on the importance of resilient communities and religious tolerance in countering violent extremism. Femi Adesina is special advisor on media and publicity to President Buhari. He says Nigeria and the United States have been working together to fight terrorism.
This is not the first time Secretary Kerry is engaging with the Nigerian government on crucial issues. We were in Washington earlier this year, and a number of things came up. I was at that meeting, and he made some pledges on what America can do for Nigeria, particularly in combating terrorism and in the anti-corruption war. So I expect that there will be a furtherance of those issues that were discussed earlier in Washington.
I assume you're talking about the U.S.-Nigeria Bi-National Commission meeting that was held back in, I think, earlier this year. And you said the secretary made some pledges. What are some of those pledges? And has the United States been able to follow up on those pledges?
It is basically to assist Nigeria, assist with intelligence, assist with resources, and lend any kind of helping hand that Nigeria can use, and we indeed can use as much as America would give.
The secretary mentioned during that meeting earlier this year that a long-term solution to the Boko Haram problem requires effective governance. For example, not just military, but at least providing some jobs for the young people so that they have a future.
Yes, I remember that he said the war would not necessarily be won through force of arms alone. And Nigeria has all the options on the table. Negotiation is a possibility if the insurgents are willing. And of course, those who have surrendered voluntarily, 800 of them surrendered recently, they are undergoing rehabilitation. So that shows you that the government is willing to use all the options available.
You mentioned negotiations. I think earlier this month there were talks of negotiating with Boko Haram for the release of the Chibok girls. Is that true, and where are we?
The president has always said it, that the government will be willing to negotiate. But you will recall recently that it was like Boko Haram had a split right down the middle. There are two leaders as we speak. So until the authentic leadership is established, you know that kind of negotiation may be difficult.
I was reading a story that the so-called Niger Delta Avengers have announced what they call conditional ceasefire. That is, they are willing to cease fire if your government will stop what they call harassing innocent civilians in the Niger Delta region. Do you know about that? And has your government been harassing innocent civilians in the Niger Delta region?
Well, the Niger Delta issue is being treated as a security matter. So I wouldn't be able to make comments on that. If you get the National Security Advisor, because he's leading negotiations on that, he will be able to tell you what the true position.
Femi Adesina is the Special Advisor on Media and Publicity to President Muhammadu Buhari of Nigeria. He was speaking with me from Abuja. The Supreme Court of Liberia will today, Monday, hear from the two feuding sides of the House of Representatives. About 40 of the 73 members of the House want the embattled Speaker Alex Tyler to recuse himself from presiding over the House business until his criminal indictment for alleged bribery is resolved. Speaker Tyler has accused President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf of being behind the effort to unseat him. He wants the Supreme Court to issue a writ of prohibition against those trying to conduct House business without his authority. The Speaker says he is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Representative Edwin Snow is the past immediate former Speaker of the House of Representatives and a vocal member of the anti-Tyler forces. He says his group will respect whatever decision the Supreme Court makes today.
We, as lawmakers, have asked the Speaker to recuse himself based on the situation regarding his indictment out of the Global Witness Report. And we are cognizant that the accused is presumed innocent till proven guilty. So we are not asking him to be removed, but we want him to recuse himself until he's vindicated. So we're going to listen to the Supreme Court from the conference, and whatever the court decision is, we will respect the Supreme Court. As you know, that's the Supreme Court is the final arbiter of justice in our country, and we will respect the decision of the Supreme Court. Notwithstanding, we are determined not to sit under the Speaker's gavel. We want him to recuse himself. He still remains a lawmaker. And then once he can clear his name, he can come back and preside over the body.
Is your demand for the Speaker to recuse himself, does he have any legal basis?
The Constitution provides that each house of the legislature, meaning the House of Senate and the House of Representatives, can consummate its own rule, provided those rules are not in conflict with the Constitution. Having said that, our rules in Rule 44 of the House's rules say that the House will defend itself against and fight against corruption, and we will preserve the integrity of the House. Now, fighting against corruption and acts of corruption, we are not saying again that the Speaker is guilty of any corrupt practice. We are just saying in our fight against corruption that the Speaker is being indicted through a court of competent jurisdiction, we are asking the Speaker to recuse himself so that he has the time, because once the Speaker is indicted criminally, meaning the Speaker has to go to court, he has to sit on the defendant's bench, and we are not looking for a Speaker that will preside over us, sit on the defendant's bench, and after his case, that he comes back and preside over the House of Representatives, and even in the case of the President's honor message, where the Speaker presides over both houses of the legislature.
The Speaker has accused the President of trying to undermine him of being responsible, to the point that it's been suggested that some of you have been paid certain amount of money to force the Speaker to recuse himself.
James, I'm not a wealthy man, but I've worked hard, and I can also tell you that during my removal, don't forget, I'm former Speaker of the House. When I was going through removal, the matter of fact, Speaker Tyler, the current Speaker, was the one that was leading that fight. And at that time, I also accused the President. Now, in our democracy, it's a very easy thing to accuse the presidency. So he's now accusing the President. He's now telling the rest of the world that the President is bribing lawmakers. I can tell you today, and I can say that clearly, that if anyone can show me evidence that the President is engaging that, I will have a press conference the next day. I will denounce it, and I will be on the side of the Speaker.
The way I understand it is that some of you who are pushing for the Speaker to recuse himself, this is a personal vendetta against the Speaker.
You know, James, I was forced to resign as Speaker of the House of Representatives some 10 years ago, and I was one of those that campaigned for the current Speaker to replace me. So it's nothing about vendetta. It's just about the rule of law. This is purely based on conviction, it's based on my passion against the fight of corruption, and I believe that that's the best thing for the Speaker to do, to save himself, to save the integrity of Liberia, and then that we can move forward as a nation.
Edwin Snow is the past immediate former Speaker of the Liberian House of Representatives. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Today's Monday, August 22nd, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 15 minutes past the hour. President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf last week to side in the ongoing saga in the House of Representatives when she declared her government support for Deputy House Speaker Hans Bachu. Bachu and a number of House members want the Speaker of the House, Alex Tyler, to recuse himself from official House business until his court case for alleged corruption is concluded. But as TTG Bro reports from Monrovia, the government has had its second thought about its support for the anti-Tyler forces.
President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, who has been accused by House Speaker Alex Tyler of masterminding his remover, Thursday wrote rebel lawmakers presiding in the joint chambers of the legislature, acknowledging their legitimacy and promising to do business with them. Minister of Information Len Eugene Nangwe appeared before the anti-Tyler legislative group and reiterated the government's support.
The plenary of the House of Representatives, sitting with the appropriate quorum, invited me and I appear before the plenary. If you are saying that somebody is sitting somewhere, I cannot confirm that I'm not his spokesman.
President Sirleaf's decision was immediately denounced by many, including Opposition Liberty Party Deputy Secretary General for Communication Ibrahim Daros Delon. Although Mr. Delon had once called for Speaker Tyler's recusal, Delon described President Sirleaf's action as ill-advised and a total meddling into the workings of another branch of government, something he said is a violation of the Constitution.
It was ill-advised for the president to have written that communication. It only gave some justification to the suspicion and the allegation that the president is sponsoring the removal of the speaker. We should respect this constitution. The constitution says it is only the lawmakers themselves who can determine who will be speaker or pro tem over them.
But a few hours later, the executive mansion withdrew the president's letter, citing a clerical error involving the addressees, reference number, and one typo. It also said for the action on the matter will be taken after the Supreme Court is done with the matter. The legislative impasse has paralyzed almost every sector of the business of the country. The head of the traditional council, whose wife is a member of the House of Representatives and a part of the group of lawmakers calling for the speaker to step aside, opted to play a mediator role. Chief Zanza Kawa, along with 15 other chiefs from Liberia's 15 political subdivisions called counties, met over the weekend with representatives from both sides to find a remedy to the saga. Chief Kawa called on House Speaker Tyler to withdraw the case from the Supreme Court, promising the matter can be resolved out of court. But Benoni Ayure, presidential candidate of the opposition All Liberian Party, says he disagrees with Chief Kawa.
I'm a traditional man myself. I respect Chief Zaza. That's my father, traditionally. But he must not be removed from the judiciary. It's not whether I'm favored Tyler or I love the government. The country is above everybody. People took oath to defend this country and the Constitution. They must do it.
With the national budget and many other legislations intended to better the lives of the ordinary people stalled for 3 months now in the House of Representatives, Liberians are hoping the Supreme Court will bring the stalemate to a logical conclusion today. For VOA News, I'm Titi Jibro reporting from Monrovia, Liberia.
It has been 10 years since a ship named Probo Koala unloaded toxic waste into Abidjan's ports, sickening hundreds of thousands and killing at least 15. A decade after the scandal, Ivorian authorities say they have cleaned the dumping sites and taken measures to make sure that this does not happen again. But the victims are still demanding justice and compensation. Emily Yop reports from Abidjan.
Nicole Benio works with neighbors among the hilly open-air landfill behind her village of Akwedo, a dozen kilometers from Abidjan. She recalls the night 10 years ago when she woke up to a smell of rotten garlic. It is here that they offloaded the toxic waste, says Benio, pointing her finger at a nearby stream. People cultivate the land nearby. On the night of August 19, 2006, trucks illegally discharged toxic waste from a ship named the Probo Koala in several open-air locations around Abidjan. Hundreds of thousands of people living near the site soon got sick and at least 15 died. Blenio says residents are still feeling the symptoms. We all have problems with our eyes, with our skin, strange stomach aches, she says. Local residents said there was never any medical follow-up and have been asking to have their medical expenses covered. Most do not have money to seek treatment. The exact composition of the toxic waste from the Probokoala remains unknown. Trafigura, the Dutch oil trading firm that chartered the vessel, has never disclosed it, despite NGOs such as Amnesty International repeatedly asking them to do so. Residents also say they can still smell the peculiar odor when it rains, despite the Ivorian government announcing last year that all locations had been decontaminated. Eager to prove their point, Ivorian authorities have recently invited a UN team to come and check. The results of their audits are expected by the end of the year. The director of the Siapol Anti-Pollution Center, Martin Ndibi, says no measures have been implemented during the past decade. Dibi said that each time a ship arrives at the port and indicates it is transporting liquids they want to offload, authorities send a team over to run an analysis. Meanwhile, victims still feel that justice has not been done. In 2007, Trafigura agreed to pay a multi-million dollar settlement to the Ivorian government in exchange for being exempted from prosecution. As he flipped through the piles of victims' folders in his office, the president of a collective of victims' associations, Denis Yao Pipira, says bringing Trafigura to justice is key in deterring similar behaviors in the future.
S'il n'y a pas eu de sanctions exemplaires, ce serait un laxisme fortement qui...
Pipira says that if there is no exemplary sanction, it will pave the way for new dumping grounds similar to the one they have experienced in 2006. Companies only focused on saving money will come to Africa to get rid of their waste with total impunity, he adds. 10 years later, many victims are still waiting for compensation. Some recently protested outside the American embassy in Abidjan, asking for the international community to step in. Emily Yop for VOA News in Abidjan.
The government of Sudan is defending the visit to Khartoum of South Sudan's first Vice President Taba Dengai. Taban Deng arrived in Khartoum Sunday and held discussions with the Khartoum government. Deng replaced rebel leader and former first vice president Riek Machar, who was evacuated from South Sudan last week by the United Nations after being either wounded or ill. Sudan Information Minister Ahmed Bilal says Khartoum, for now, recognizes Taban Deng until Riek Machar returns to Juba.
As you know, we have good relations with the government in the south of Sudan. And we have many, actually, interests between the two countries. And this visit is from the vice president. And after the meeting of the IGAD countries, they decided to deal with the situation as it is now. And when the joint forces from the UN go to Juba, and if Riek Machar, the former vice president, comes, then Taban Deng is going to resign. This is what agreed upon. If that happens, we will deal with the situation as it is now.
Does that mean Khartoum recognizes the position of Taban Dengai as the legitimate first vice president of South Sudan?
Yes, he's a legitimate. Actually, Taban Deng himself went as an envoy from the president, Salva Kiir, and he met the leaders of the IGAD. And in front of them, he told them that if Riek Machar comes to Juba, he's going to resign. And this is actually, till he comes, he will act as vice president, and he's been recognized as such, and we are dealing with him accordingly.
But Mr. Minister, IGAD, of which Khartoum is a member, has not recognized Taban Dengai yet as the legitimate first vice president of South Sudan.
Temporary. He is a legitimate vice president. Riek Guy, till now, he's out of the country. He didn't come to Juba. He said he will not come to Juba unless the international forces are there. He is afraid about his life. When he comes to Juba, and things are changed, Taban Deng is going to resign. And if that happens, then the situation will change. But till that happens, Taban Deng is a vice president. We will act with him and we'll deal with him as such.
Is Khartoum in support of a United Nations forces in South Sudan?
Actually, this is the decision of the IGAD countries, and we are together with the EU, the African countries, and the United Nations together. The only thing which we didn't agree about is that we are not going to participate with forces. They asked for Sudan to have some forces to be added or to be one of the components of the international forces, and we didn't agree about that because, you know, we have foreign sensitivity about our situation.
Does your government really believe that Dr. Riek Machar can come back to Juba?
We are not sure, actually. What he said yesterday is that he is going to come to Juba if the security situation improves. This is what he said. And we know that he went to Congo, and the United Nations helped him. They sent a helicopter to him, and they took him, and he's now with the United Nations there in Congo.
Ahmed Bilal is Sudan's information minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Khartoum. The Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition says peace can only come to South Sudan if the agreement signed last year is respected to the letter. Goy Uyol Yol, the SPLM-E opposition representative to Ethiopia and the African Union, says Taban Deng's appointment as first vice president is illegal and his visit to Sudan is intended to legitimize himself.
If you could know, Taban was in Kenya some few days ago, and this is the second leg of his tour in the region, trying to legitimize his being the first vice president. As SPLM-IO, we think that he's also trying to lobby for the regional force that's supposed to go to Juba. He's trying to negotiate terms, you know, trying to find out from Khartoum and Nairobi and other neighboring countries whether they could negotiate some terms with the force.
What do you think the fact that he's gone to Khartoum and the Minister of Information there has described Taban as a good friend, do you believe that the government in South Sudan, the Salva Kiir government, is making headway so that the IGAD region can forget about your leader, Dr. Riek Machar?
Salva Kiir cannot make that by himself, you know, and when Taban was discovered a few days ago, they thought Taban could have a leverage. You know, Taban was a governor on a border state of unity after our independence, and they thought with Taban links to Khartoum, Taban can better their relations with Khartoum. But the issue of forgetting about the first vice president, I think it's a far-fetched idea, because if we need peace in South Sudan, we need to go by the peace agreement. We should follow what was written in the letter in the spirit of the peace agreement so that the holistic peace comes back to the people. Not a partial one that will be what the government of Salva Kiir wants.
Are you willing to tell us now where is Dr. Riek Machar, your leader? Where is he? Because nobody has been able to confirm, at least from your side, to confirm, according to what we know, that he is in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Yeah, we have confirmed a few days ago that he was picked up within the Democratic Republic of Congo by UN and then the Democratic Republic of Congo government. And from there, we lost touch. But we know that he's still doing fine.
Taban Deng has told the Khartoum government that he is willing to step down if and when Dr. Machar comes back to Juba. Do you have hope that Dr. Machar can go back to Juba?
We do. We do still have hope that he can go back to Juba, but we do not believe in sincerity of what Taban Deng is telling us. And because through what happened and through what they went through and changes that happened, you know, we do not believe that they are willing to step down when Dr. Machar comes to Juba. They will create a lot of hurdles and problems so that thing doesn't happen.
Goy Uyol Yol is the SPLM-E opposition representative to Ethiopia and the African Union. He was speaking with me from Addis Ababa. And that's it for this Monday, August 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very, very productive week.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Next on Straight Talk Africa. How do you think Africa fared at the 2016 Rio Olympics? Shaka Sali and his guests will review the 2016 Olympics. That's next on Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.